welcome to another edition of the Renegades podcast. Have you ever felt trapped or locked in your own business? Dave Dean and Steve Matthews sit and talk about all things business and the Renegade path. So settle in and enjoy this edition of the Renegade podcast and free yourself from the prison of your business.
I'm a little bit worried at the start of this podcast because Dave Dean is thinking we may be in a while. Yeah, do you know what? I can actually smell a burning. Hang on a second.
That's what she said. Yeah.
Quiet, everyone. Yes, definitely cogs. Yeah, you need to oil them. You need to oil.
Yeah. See, now I've got a whole new picture there.
Yeah, well, no, that's the trouble with you.
You need to oil them. Yeah, that's just scary now.
Yes, no, but that's just your mindset. So. Funny enough, we were talking a little bit about. I was talking about a customer of mine this week, and he's got a fantastic business, and really can't step back from the business at all. Mm-hmm. You know, he's turning over quite a lot of money. It's about £7 million, which is about $9 million. And just totally and utterly is unable to come away from the business.
Yeah.
You know, funny enough, he bought himself a property in Spain last year in order to start taking a back seat. Mm. And I think he's about 59. He is 59. And he was talking about succession planning, trying to take a back seat from the business, and, you know, going out to Spain to live 6 months of the year while the business, you know, still funded him, yeah. And the business kept running in the background. And the time that he took off, he ruined the business.
Yeah,
it's sad, really. You know, it's because you're a slave to the business, Dave.
For me, this is part of this is exactly the problem all business owners have, Steve. And what they fail to do, they succession planning, right? It's a little bit like a pension, right?
Yeah.
How many people start thinking about their pension when they're about 45 or 50.
Yeah.
Way too late.
When you realise you're mortal, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. When, you know, back in the days in your teens and your early 20s, you know, we all think we're immortal, we're never going to die. Or actually some of us think, oh, we're going to die by the time we're 30 anyway. So either way, your thinking says, I'll either never die or I'm going to die too early. Mm. I don't need a pension. So the problem is business owners, that pervasive attitude,
yeah,
gets into your brain as an entrepreneur, and you're so much in the moment, you completely ignore what's going to happen in 25, 30 years time, or whenever it is you want to exit the business. So, you know, that old adage of begin with the end in mind is so important,
yeah,
that we should be thinking very, very early on about succession.
Yeah.
And the customer you're talking about, unfortunately for him, the planning for succession planning now, that succession planning process has begun or is beginning way too late. Do you know what? I'm going to retract that. It's not that it's beginning way too late. What it's now doing is going to make it harder for him to reach any form of succession quickly, right? So the issue he's got is he should have been thinking about this 5 or even 10 years ago,
right,
where he's pulling people into the business, either new people in or coaching existing people to begin to think in terms of how they would be working in 5 or 10 years' time,
yeah,
right? And having the conversation with them, because the other thing you don't want to do, of course, is you don't want to say to somebody, hey, you're really, really good in your job, so I'm going to now make you a supervisor.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you've come across, I know you've come across this phrase, Peter Principle, right?
Yeah.
Peter Principle is where a person reaches their own level of incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
So a great carpenter is so good at his job, the boss says, I'm going to make him a supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, up until the Friday, he was a great carpenter. He was one of the team. He was one of the boys. The Monday morning he comes back in, he's now the supervisor. He's the boss. All the other guys have got to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because that guy now has to change the way he thinks. Yeah. And very abruptly he's gone from one role to another. Probably not going to be very successful in that new role. And now what you do is the owner of the business suddenly thinks, shit, I've put the guy in the wrong place here. He's really not good as a supervisor. So he lets him go because he replaced him as a carpenter with somebody else. Mm. So now what the guy's lost is a really good carpenter and a supervisor. Mm. So succession planning is about planning in plenty of time, but also putting the right pegs in the right holes.
Yeah. I mean, you're just talking about people, Eddie, but there's so many other things that go with that. Isn't it? So many other, you know, the processes, the procedures, the system.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's funny, you know, we use this as an example, but it was actually awful. You know, if talk about a slave to the business, and he really resents the business now. Mm. He hates it. Hates coming to work in the morning. He actually said to me, you know, I am actually jealous. He was quite... not bitter towards me because we're good friends, but you know what I mean. He was like, "How have you managed to do it?" Yeah. And you know, luckily I did. But it was more to do with the fact, you know, he's just totally and utterly a slave now to his business. You can't do the things that he want to do at a certain stage of life that you now got to, because nothing's in place in order to do those. And it doesn't matter how fast you catch up now. You know, it's going to take, you know, when I, you know, for me to do it, it took me 7 years. So if you think about it, if it takes him 7 years, he's going to be 66.
Yeah.
Well, he would want to retire when he's 60.
Yeah.
So he'd always resent those next 6 years. Mm. You know, so it's never going to get any better at all. I just think, and you know, and trying, you mentioned that about, I call it over-promoting people. You know, it's just, you know, I always hear the story about the guy who was a fantastic front of house or a fantastic waiter.
Mm.
And your best waiter, great tips, you know, fantastic at it. And because you think that, you need to promote them in order to recognize the fact that they're great. You know, this person, because you've got a pay structure that says you can't pay this guy over £25,000 a year because he's a waiter, but he's the best waiter you've got. So in order to take him to 35,000, you've got to make him a supervisor or front of house, or you've got to make him a manager of other...
maitre d' now.
Yeah, but he's a crap maitre d'.
Yeah.
But you've put him in that position, you've over-promoted him. He doesn't want to be a maitre d', but because of your pay structure, you've put him in a box where you've said, well, you can't be a waiter on 20, 35 grand. Why? Just pay him if he's the best waiter and you want to keep him, pay him what he deserves.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what position he's in. And, you know, so those kind of things, you know, the flexibility of the pay structure, everything that's so important in those things, I just think, you know, and... go back to another thing is, in the succession planning, what I believe he's done, and I it's not just this person actually. I was speaking to another person. They've done succession planning where they've. This is not the person I was talking about, but another customer of mine has promoted a family member into a directorship role, and it's just not working.
Yeah.
Because the staff resented.
Mm.
The staff that have been there for many, many years resented.
Mm.
And the person, the family member, doesn't want it. You know, so you've given them a poison chalice, really.
Yeah.
So they've been gifted this thing, which they didn't even want.
Mm.
So they're not even going to try and work for it. You know, to be a director of a business, you've got to bloody work for that. You know, it's an accolade that everybody wants, but hardly anybody appreciates how bloody hard it is.
Yeah.
You know, they all want, I'm a director, I'm going to play golf every Friday, I'm going to have a director's car, I'll have the Porsche, I'll have the whatever it is. But this, you know, the working 24/7, the phone never switching off, the emails on the weekend, everything that comes with that business, you know, there's a big difference between being an employee and an employer, isn't it?
It's interesting, as you were saying that, it reminded me of something that John Maxwell said when he was at a big event once, and a young lad came up to him and said, "John, I want to do what you do," and he said, very quickly came back to him and said, "Yeah, but do you want to do what I've done to do what I do?"
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a real challenge. I mean, what you just spoke into is the fact that everybody wants the success. They want the rewards and the trappings of success, but they rarely want to do the things you have to do to get that success.
Yeah.
Another way of putting it, is again another John Maxwell saying, to be honest, anything worthwhile is uphill. But too many people have uphill ambition but downhill habits.
Yeah. I said everything hard is uphill.
Yeah.
Everything worthwhile is uphill.
But as I say, but too many people have uphill desires, uphill ambition, but downhill habits.
Yeah.
They're not willing to do what it takes, you know. Coming back to the sort of succession process, the thing for me, you're right. Succession is about people and systems. And we had a conversation, you and I, with Ian Stewart some time ago, and he spoke into that very, very well, because he's got several businesses, interests, as you know, and he had got a whole bunch of people in very, very key top positions. And as he said, at the time, it was the logical thing to do. You know, you put people, very often we put people in positions, often because of the longevity. You know, he's been with us since the day we started. Therefore, he deserves to be the MD or a directorial position at least. In reality, just because they've been there 10 years, 20 years, however long it is, doesn't make them the right person for the role. But what we tend to do out of loyalty, misplaced loyalty or misplaced belief in the person's skill set, we over-promote, as you said, or we apply the Peter principle, and suddenly they become incompetent. Not because they are incompetent, but they're incompetent in the role we've pushed them into. So getting the balance right in the beginning. So for those thinking of succession today, or perhaps those who are not thinking of succession today but suddenly realize they should be, you know, the first step is to think about the role that needs to be fulfilled, and then to look at the skill sets needed by the person who is to fulfill the role.
Mm.
Once you understand those two, you can then start to look at your internal staff and say, do I have somebody that fills those, that meets those skill sets?
Mm.
And if you do, don't just automatically promote. Go talk to them. Sit down with them.
Mm.
Ask them what it is they want for their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and if their vision for themselves aligns with your vision for the business and for them, brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Promote from within. Yeah. Job done.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then you've just saved yourself hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of cost by putting someone in place and going down way too far down the road before you realise it's the wrong person in the wrong role.
I think that's a great point, actually. I was talking to, again, another actually, a client of mine, actually, and they were looking to branch into the Far East, all right? They had a representative already in South Korea, and they were looking for the rest of Asia, so Indonesia and Australia. And the owner of the business said, I've got just a guy. It's just a guy. I know him. I want him to do this. I want him to move. He's currently in South Korea. We want to get him to either Perth or Melbourne or Sydney. And we're going to do, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And I just let him, and he talked to me about the plans he had for this individual for about 15 minutes, and he was passionate about it. He could see it. He was going to be the vice president of the Far East and all the whatever. He just had so much going for this guy, you know, that was out there already. And I after about 15 minutes, I said, there's only one flaw to your plan. I said, have you asked him? And he went, no. I said, well, you know, you've made a goal and a vision for what you want up there, but the person that is integral to that happening, you haven't included into your planning.
Yeah.
That person doesn't know you've got those plans for them. And that person may have no aspiration to do that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And funny enough, we set an accountability at the time and said one of the things that he would do over the 6-week sort of Christmas period was we'd sit down with this guy. This guy was flying into the UK to have a meeting to talk about what's going on in the business, and he said, I'll sit down with him and have that chat then. So we met about 3 days after this gentleman had flown back to South Korea. And I said, how did it go? He said, it was excellent meeting, really good. I said, oh, you get what you want? He said, no, he's not interested at all. He's got no intention of doing that whatsoever. Right. In fact, he's got his own 5-year plan where he wants to go and work for a blue chip. He wants to go and work potentially, yes, stay out either in America or Australia. But yeah, he's got no intention of staying with us. And I said, how's you feel? And he said, I feel great. He said, at least now I know what I need to do. I need to find someone to fill that role.
Absolutely.
But he'd already made those plans.
Yeah.
And you know, how many times?
Yeah, that's the danger for us all as business owners. We think that our decision is the only decision to be made.
Yeah.
When in reality, our decisions impact on so many other people. Yeah,
I agree.
And but the clarity there is brilliant, isn't it? Because now he knows the kind of person he wants, because that clearly was the guy he felt could fulfill.
Yeah.
So he knows the skill sets he needs to match. Now all he has to do is externally go out and look for somebody with those skill sets.
Yeah.
Half the job is done.
Yeah.
Plus, he knows exactly where he stands with that member of staff.
Yeah.
And you know, we've always said the same thing, right? We would never stand in somebody's way and stop them from progressing and growing and developing. And if that meant, in order for them to do more, be more and have more, they would have to leave our business, then at interview, I always used to say to people, I'll drive you to the next interview.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. We want you to be the best you can be.
Yeah.
And if that means we are not big enough as a company to take them where they need to go, where they want to go, so be it. You know, there's no point in us holding someone back, keeping them in a role they never want to be in. But coming back to the succession thing, one of the things that Darren and I did 11 years ago now, it's actually quite weird looking back on something you've done and saying, at the time, we didn't think it was that monumental. Yeah. We simply said, look, we know we're never going to be in this role forever.
Yeah.
We want to grow. We want to develop. We want to move on. We need to be thinking who's going to take over.
It's funny how those decisions are sometimes the biggest ones. Yeah. I've sat down with my business partner and did that. But it wasn't planned like that. It wasn't like a big monument. Like you just said, it was like we did it. We kind of didn't know why we did it or what triggered it, but we did it.
Yeah. I'd love to claim that it was a wonderful piece of genius, but it wasn't. You know, it was simply one of those things. A conclusion we came to was that we were never going to be able to continue working at the pace we were.
Yeah.
If we did, we were going to end up in a box, right? Yeah. So we said, what are we going to do? How are we going to find a way of relieving the pressure on us? We know we can't do it overnight. We know we couldn't elevate someone in the business to take on those roles. So how were we going to get there?
Yeah.
And I had a different challenge at the time because both my sons were reaching 16. They were both really keen to do something. They just didn't know what they wanted to do. And I knew John wanted to go down the academic route, but Tom was more practical and wanted to go down the more vocational route. So I sat them both down and along with a friend of theirs, Bob, who was in exactly the same position. He was born within the same days, so they were like 7 days apart in terms of age. And we said, look, we've got this idea. We'd like to create a career apprenticeship for you guys. We'd like to take you into our print business, have you go in all the different departments and spend time there. And then after 3 years, when you've had 6 months in each department, you let us know where you think your specialities are. We'll probably have a pretty good idea already of where you're strong and where you're weak. Less strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have you focus in those areas. Mm-hmm. Now, John said, fuck you, Dad. I'm not coming to work for you. I've got my own plans. And so he wanted to go to university. But Tom said, yeah, I'm up for that. Cheeky bugger was already earning £120 a week as a paper boy. And he said, do I really have to give up my paper job, Dad?
Mm.
And I said, no, you can carry on doing that if you think you can do that before you start work. Mm. Come home, get changed, and then come to work. And he did for 3 months.
Mm.
And then in the end said, he was exhausted every day and had to give it up. But But actually, he came to work for us for about, I think, just about 25 quid a week more than he was getting as a paper boy.
Right.
And but now, he's the MD. 11 years later, Tom and Bob, who both agreed to join us, Bob is now our financial director. So he looks after all the finances and the credit control and financial control of the business.
Yeah.
And Tom is now the MD. But it's taken 11 years. And Steve, if we'd not thought about it back then, and as I said, I'd love to claim it was a stroke of genius. Yeah. It wasn't. In hindsight, it is a stroke of genius. Yeah. And I would urge anybody in business right now to be thinking, if I haven't got a succession plan in place, what do I need to do today to make sure I get one?
Yeah.
It's easy for them to go out and recruit somebody tomorrow. But you and I know, Steve, right? We get as many failed recruitments as we do successful.
Yeah.
Because we don't know people well enough. Now, we've had 11 years of working with Tom and Bob. We know the areas they're strong in.
Yeah.
We know the areas they need improvement in. But both of them are now playing very integral roles in that company. Darren and I have stepped away from the company. We're non-executive directors. We simply turn up to board meetings and we provide on-call advice to them when they need it. But they continually provide income to Darren and I. And we don't have to work for it. Now, that's a great...
That's the definition of wealth, isn't it?
Absolutely is. Well, it's certainly one of the streams.
Yeah, I think what they say, rich is having money and being able to do things with money. Being wealthy is having a business where you can walk away for it for a year and you come back and it's provided you for that whole year. Absolutely. And it's worth more when you come back than it was when you left. Now, but I'm a little bit different to that.
Right.
So when I started Aspect 4C... In 2009, I'd obviously failed catastrophically in 2007, as I've alluded to. When I started from day one with a mindset of building a business that works without me.
Mm.
That was right from the start. Now, when I say that to everybody, everybody says, well, how can you do that? Because you still got to do everything. I did do everything at the start. I did everything.
Yeah.
But I put systems and processes and things in place that would allow me at one day to walk away from it, which I did last year. So, I did it right from day one. And I was listening, funny enough, I was listening to a couple of people this week, driving back and forth as you do, and I'm always never listen to the radio, or certainly don't listen to the news. I was listening to Tim Ferriss on his podcast.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, because it's the 10-year anniversary of the 4-hour week. Which is
so he's up to 40 hours now.
Yeah, that's right. He's done 40 hours in 10 years. Well, no, it's a bit more than that. Isn't it? We need to work the maths out a bit better, I think. But he said that obviously you have to build a business that works without you. That's part and parcel of the 4-hour week.
Yeah,
yeah. So your sales works without you. It automatically you're selling when you're sleeping. You know, the money's taking care of itself, and there's systems and processes in place to deliver your product or your service when you're not there. And then, but Tony Robbins, actually, because on his podcast this week, I don't know if you know this, actually, because Tony Robbins has been doing what he's been doing for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's uncanny, isn't it?
40 years, but you
know
how much...
He became a coach in 19, I think.
He's turning over 6 billion quid this year.
Oh, my word. I didn't know that.
6 billion. But he's got 37 companies. And out of those companies, he said 32 you would never know I was involved in. Because he said right from day one, you set it up so that it works without you. And you get people in that are better than you in all these places to make sure that it works.
Mm.
And if these guys are doing that, Branson's the same. You don't fly planes.
No.
He don't fly planes. He never cut a record in his life.
Yeah.
So he was never a music artist, but he had the most successful independent record label in the world.
Mm.
He's now got Virgin Atlantic. He don't fly planes. He's got a funding, you know, Virgin Money. He don't know anything about... Well, he obviously knows a lot about invested money, but what I'm saying is he always brings in people that are better than him to run the business for him.
Absolutely.
And he's not... You know, that doesn't hurt his ego if somebody comes into that business and can do it better than him. In fact, all these people, myself, yourself, would welcome that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... And I know there's people out there, probably not, definitely not on this call, definitely not listening to this, because this is not the environment for that kind of person that likes to keep people down.
Yeah.
suppresses, you know, growth of those people. If they see something better in it, they undermine them.
Yeah.
You know, they, it's kind of like mental abuse, to be fair.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, and another guy that we don't do business with anymore, was, remember, he believed that his business would run without him. And I was at pains to try and bite my lip and tell him he was far from the truth. Simple things like, if somebody ordered something from his company, and he was, say he went on holidays for 7 days, yeah? Because he had the ultimate sign-off on everything, if someone ordered it on the first day he went away, that person would be waiting until he come back to say, yeah, go and order that and send it out.
Yeah.
So he had the ultimate say. So the customer who'd ordered on day 7 would think, oh, that was quite quick.
Yeah.
The customer ordered seven days ago, but like, where the hell is this? I could go to Tesco's and buy this.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, what's that about? You know, it's just, and the greatest example I ever remember that was, it was Christmas time, and they were supposed to be sending wine out to customers, you know. So that his, he had a PA as well, and the PA said, we need to give something to the customers. He said, order wine, just order wine. Some, order some white, order some red, make sure the customer gets a bottle of each. So she went onto a wine club, can't remember what it was, but she went on, put everything in the basket, but she couldn't order it because she wasn't allowed to order it. So even though he'd said to her, go and order it, so after Christmas, he said, nobody had any Christmas things. She said, yeah, because I left it on your email, I put it in the calendar to do, because you didn't go on to the website with the link that I give you in the email to click yes and put your credit card number in, no one had wine. How berserk, how mad is that?
Yeah.
How? But Dave, you know, for me, it was like, not all right, okay, so that went wrong.
Mm.
But it was like, if you were empowering somebody to do something, how bad could that have gone? Let's be honest, how bad could somebody ordering wine gone? Should order too much? Well, okay, keep it for Easter.
Take it home.
Keep it for Easter, yeah. Drink it yourself.
Drink it, I'd have taken it home.
You know, and not only that, wine doesn't go off. I don't know if anybody notices. They keep it and it makes a lot of money later on down the line. But yeah, well, how bad could that have gone? Yeah. Why did they need to check that off?
That's bizarre. But we all do it though, Steve. You know, you know, because you've gone through the experience yourself. We all start, when we run our first business, or maybe first several businesses, we have a problem. Because we think we're the only person that can do it. We think anybody else can't do it as good as us. We think, you know, I remember saying, I look back now and I cringe at it, right? I remember coming home and thinking to myself, do you know what? We couldn't have got to the end of today without me. If I hadn't have been there, that wouldn't have been done. That wouldn't have been done. And I go home proud of that.
Mm.
And it's time that and experience that leads you to the point where you realize that putting yourself in a position where it couldn't have happened without you is the worst thing in the world that any business owner can do. So, you know, again, my advice to anyone listening to this would be, find every possible way you can to delegate, say no. Every time, in fact, practice it, right? Every time someone comes to you and says, hey, I've got this issue, can you help me? Say no. Now that's going to be alien to 90% of people in business. And I don't mean say it in an arrogant way and tell them to go forth and multiply. I'm saying say no to them, but guide them in a way that they can find the solution themselves. More often than not, they already know the solution, but they lack the confidence, or in their own mind, the authority to provide the solution. So they end up coming to the business owner because they believe that business owner has to be the one that makes the final decision.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that you can, as a business owner, say no and pass the position back to the individual. Try not to take on the monkeys, as they say.
Yeah,
don't let anyone else put the monkey on your shoulder.
I think so. And I think that you've got to let people fail in a controlled environment.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and people think, well, as you said, I don't think I have had, obviously, I'm trying to make myself out to be perfect here. But that attitude of nobody does it better than me. I am the reverse. everybody in my business does it better than me. Actually, sometimes I wonder what I do, you know, but everybody does it better than me because I let them, because I want them to. I want them to be better than me because I don't want to do it. I don't want to be on that call. I don't want to be doing that accounting. I don't want to be doing that bookkeeping.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. I actually, and me, I think I read somewhere, and maybe this is where I got from. Being a lazy bastard as a perk being in business.
Absolutely.
Because you always want somebody else. You always find someone else to do it for you.
Definitely.
You always find. I never thought I'd admit that.
Somebody said to me once.
Am I admitting you that I'm a lazy bastard, Dave?
Well, but why not? Why not? Somebody said to me once, if you want something done, give it to a lazy person. Someone else, mind you, said to me, if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree with both. Because a busy person will find out how to get it done. Because they don't want to encroach on the other things that they've got to do. A lazy person will find a way of getting it done, even if it's a way you would never dream of doing it yourself.
Yeah, I know. I just can't understand that. I think you've got to have the mindset of trying. You know, what's the point of bringing somebody in and then undermining them by doing their job for them?
Yeah.
Because you're going to lose, all you're going to do is lose great people, aren't you? Because you bring someone in, fantastic, they interview really well, they CV great, everything about them is great, you're enthusiastic. Yeah, I brought this operations manager in, he's fantastic. And when you come in, don't do like that. Why didn't you, let them get on with it and let them impress you?
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than you say, we don't do it like that, yeah. Well, who says? What's that got to do with it?
It's a danger, isn't it? When you say that's the way we do it here, you're automatically shutting off your mind to potentially far better, far more efficient processes than you might already have.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that I remember as you were talking then, I remembered being in the audience in Michael Gerber's E-Myth seminar. And I remember him saying this phrase. He was talking about how exactly as we're speaking now, right? He was speaking into business owners that employ people, and then they take over from them. They say, "Oh, you know, it'll take me 15 minutes to show you, but I can do it in 5 minutes. So don't worry, I'll do it." And then he said to the audience, and there were about 500-600 people in the room, I think. And he said, "How many of you know that you've got a paid audience in work?"
Yeah.
And that phrase. It was kind of like a guy taking a sledgehammer and hitting me right between the eyes with it.
Yeah.
Because I suddenly realised, not that my staff were lazy, good for nothing, couldn't do anything. None of those things. And at times, I have to confess, sadly, that I slipped into that mindset thinking that the staff were the ones in the wrong.
Yeah.
But in reality, he just hit me over the head with a sledgehammer, because I suddenly realised that I was the one that was wrong.
Yeah.
And I had created the entire bloody problem.
Yeah.
Time to get out of your own way, you know? Yeah. So
how many times do your staff sit back on you? And you know, I see it all the time. When someone has a crack or something, and they think they've done a really good job, and then the boss comes in and says, "Why did you do like that? That was rubbish. Why did you do like that?"
Yeah.
Eventually then, and the boss says, "I would have done it this way. This is what you should have done this way." In a way that makes them feel, it's belittling, it makes you feel, underpowered, everything. That's really bad thing. And then they go, "Fuck that, I'm not going to do that again."
Yeah.
So when the problem comes up again, they just sit back. And as you said, they become an audience. They become passive.
Yeah.
So they'll do their job, but they think, "I'm not going to venture outside of the realms of this job because I get dressed down all the time."
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. I see it all the time. Actually, I see it all everywhere I go. I see it. It's and to go back to what you said, it's like that old saying. I think that if you give a man a fish, you'll feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you'll feed him forever.
Absolutely.
You know, it's right, isn't it? It's right. I think it's all the trouble is, it's all common sense. But my father told me the thing about common sense is not very common.
But
I'm sure we could ramble all day. So I think what we probably should do is, why don't we give, everybody some top tips for making sure of building a business that works without them.
Mm.
So I guess we've talked about most of them today. Certainly delegate would be one of them, yeah? So if you bring people in, you delegate, and you allow those people to flourish, really. You know, and I can't stress enough, you know, that was one thing that really worked for me, is bringing someone in to do a job and helping them to do the job rather than oppressing them and stopping them do the job they want to do. They won't do it like you do it.
No.
You have to. I think if you can't get that in your head, then there's no point employing people. You might as well just be an army of one all the time.
Exactly. And it's better to have 10 staff working at 70% of your capacity.
Yeah.
Or your believed, your perceived capacity, than it is to have no one and you having to do it all.
Mm.
So, yeah, you're right. You've got to accept. There has to be a line that you are prepared to accept in terms of quality, efficiency, productivity.
Mm.
But get them to that position, accept it, delegate and let them fail forward, as you said earlier, right? Mm. Let them fail in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
Be prepared, be happy that they failed. Because if they found a way not to do something, pretty certain that they will next time try a different way.
Yeah.
And even if that way fails, let that happen, providing it's in a controlled environment so they're not bringing the business down, but they're failing in a way that you say, okay, what have we learned from this?
Yeah.
And how can we make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
But certainly delegate. But one thing I would say, and you've mentioned this, I think you mentioned it a little earlier, before delegation can happen, automation needs to happen. Systems need to be put in place.
Mm.
Now, those systems, by the way, need to be flexible enough to allow, whilst you're creating an environment that's consistent and systemic, or systematic, I should say, be prepared for people to come in and give them the opportunity, in fact, create a system for them to be able to recommend changes to the system.
Challenge the system, got to.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I mean, I started, when I first came out the forces, I started working in a manufacturing background. And they used Kaizen, which was, made famous in the Japanese manufacturing after World War II. I think actually it was called the Toyota way for a long time.
Yeah.
Which was everybody, no matter where they are in the process, from the CEO to the basic operator, had a meaningful input into the system, into the process, with the ultimate aim is to reduce waste.
Yeah.
And the waste isn't waste a byproduct. It could be wasted time, wasted energy. I don't know. I can't remember. But we always did that. I certainly do that internally myself. Mm. So just because a process is really working today, how can I get it better? You know. So something's taken. If I got a process that takes 3 days to go through, how can I make that a day?
Yeah.
How can I make that day half a day, an hour? It still gets the same result, but you reduce it all the time. But you have to change it all the time. And it's a continuous improvement all the time. And so the automation for me is massive. Yeah, that you can, you know that things are going to happen in a certain way to get a certain outcome without your input.
Yeah.
If you've got to have input into everything all the time to ensure your customer or your service is delivered in a certain way, or your product comes out in a certain way, you're always going to be involved. You're always going to have your finger jammed into something all the time. And when you're doing that, doesn't Gerber talk about the guy sweeping the floor?
Yeah.
When he grabs the brush off the guy and says, no, you don't do it like this. I'm doing it because you don't do it properly.
Yeah.
And he says, well, how bad is it? He said, well, I do it a 10 out of 10 and this guy does it an 8 out of 10. Isn't 8 good enough?
Yeah.
When you come to sweeping the floor?
Yeah.
Does it need to be 10 out of 10?
Well, isn't 8 good enough in many aspects? Yeah, in almost all aspects. You know, I have this, I do have a worry about people who say it's not good enough and then strive perfection. And what is it someone said to me the other day? Perfection is the enemy of productivity, or the enemy of action. You could throw a different word into that 100 times over, I'm sure. But perfection is an enemy quite often of getting things done. You know, we how many businesses fail to launch simply because the owners are trying to be perfect. They're trying to make everything absolutely spot on. I've done it myself. I continue to do it myself at times. And then I have to check in with myself and stop it. And I get people like you that come to me and say,
JFDI, Dave.
Dave.
JFDI.
That's right.
I'm not going to say what it is, but just flipping do it when you sort it out. So I think automate, delegate.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think you've got to be coaching your staff. You've got to be bringing the staff on. You know, and my take on that is, if you keep people down, if you think about leaning on somebody, you're actually making yourself smaller anyway when you lean on someone, aren't you? Because you're leaning and you're actually tilting. For those who are just listening, I'm actually tilting now.
And it's a very strange visual image. Yeah, a nice tilt, yeah.
So, no, but if you're trying to keep people down, you're going to keep yourself down. Whereas if you elevate people, the outcome of that is they elevate you.
Mm.
So if you manage to bring, which is what the reason why I went to the John Maxwell team, which is why I went on coaching, because I knew that if I was be able to elevate my staff, they'd elevate me. So and you coaching the staff is bringing the staff through, not suppressing them, for me is one of the biggest tips really for trying to move yourself away from the business.
Mm. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, coaching for performance is an incredible process.
Yeah.
And I think any business owner who has aspirations to grow individually or to grow their organization needs to understand coaching. They don't have to become a qualified or accredited coach, but they do need to understand what coaching means. Comes back to your comment earlier, right? That there's a massive difference between teaching, mentoring, and coaching. You know, teaching, you're telling someone what to do.
Yeah.
You're giving them a fish.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fish, go cook that. You'll eat, you'll be fine today.
Yeah.
But now tomorrow I need another fish.
Yeah.
If you're not around, what am I going to do? So mentorship is... You kind of telling them how you fish, but coaching is helping them to learn how to fish, and probably better than you did.
Yeah.
And coaching for me is such a vital part in every business, every aspect of business growth.
Right.
Just understanding how you can get the best out of anyone in your organization by asking a question, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I think every business owner should have that thing on the wall. You know that, what happens if I train them and they leave? Yeah. What happens if you don't train them and they stay?
Yes.
I think everybody should put that on their wall.
Absolutely. Do you know what? I think we'll print posters. We'll make a meme, and we should do that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It should become a renegade maxim.
Yeah. That's a good one.
What if you don't? No. What if you train them and they leave? What if you don't train them and they stay? Yeah. Spot on.
Well, I mean, I think everybody could hopefully get something from that, Dave. What do you think? Have we rambled on for long enough?
We've kind of rambled. Well, we do that for a living, Steve, so nothing's changed. Look, if we've helped one person today to think about how they might remove themselves from their business, and you know, I know we said earlier that it's kind of too late. It's never too late, is it, to put something in place?
Yeah.
And maybe if we can help those who perhaps haven't done it yet, but have a short space of time to do it, if we've helped them to provide a succession process in their organizations, and it'll take them less than the 11 years it's taken us, then I'd be happy, man, if we've only helped one person to do that.
Thank you so much for taking your time to listen to the Renegades podcast. Being an entrepreneur is a lonely place, and all we want here at Renegades is for you to achieve the success that you want and to live the life that you deserve. Loads more information is available on the website, 729renegades.com. That's 729renegades.com. If you like the podcast, please like it, rate it, share it. Get in touch through the website, and see you again next time. And I say, hey, 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 leave it like